Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport on day 7. And second Monday, manic Monday, magic Monday. What are the other M words we used to describe this Monday, David, of Wimbledon 2017? And we are standing just outside the press area in our usual spot in the aftermath of, without question, the biggest shock of the tournament, the exit of two-time champion Rafael Nadal at the hands of Gilles Muller, who's been just called into the press conference room.
Muller Monday.
Muller Monday.
I tell you, that's...
You've been mullered.
Well, not quite, but certainly edged out by Gilles Muller, who was amazing tonight.
He was hard as nails.
Hard as nails.
I didn't see him hitting on forced error in that fifth set.
How many match points were there either way? I can't remember. There were so many.
He took it on the fifth.
And I mean, Nadal had a number too. I mean, there was...
Nadal didn't have any match points. He had break points, which
would have left him serving for the match.
That's,
yeah.
And that we won't go into our serving first in the fifth set debate. But as you know, I consider it an enormous advantage.
Well, I think you were right. And there were a number of people, two or three people mentioned on social media about how the pressure was ramping up and whether it was going to take a toll eventually. And Nadal, I think it did.
Nadal successfully served to stay in it 8 times. It was at the 9th time of asking that he broke. And it was at the 10th time of asking that Andy Roddick broke in 2009,
yes.
Wasn't it? And it's just an enormous ask to deal with that pressure time after time. Most would have crumbled long before. And it's only because it was Rafael Nadal. Nadal only hit 2 backhand errors in that fifth set. 2 backhand errors. I haven't got the stats on the forehand. I thought it was more the forehand, perhaps, if anything, that let him down. But basically, I haven't got much Nadal analysis for you. I think that was about Gilles Muller.
That was Muller's win, and he served and volleyed to victory. I mean, one of the other matches we'll talk about later involves Garbiñe Muguruza, who made more than 50 approaches to the net in her brilliant win over Angelique Kerber. And that is one of the takeaways I have really so far from this tournament is you can prosper at the net, and that was proved brilliantly by Gilles Muller today, because, you know, he is a limited tennis player in terms of what he can do from the back of the court. I'm not trying to be unkind, because he hit some great passing shots today.
He admits that himself.
But,
David,
you know, he had a game plan.
He's working with what he's got.
He had a wonderful game plan. I mean, Nadal fought tooth and nail out there tonight. It was just one of the great epic contest. We were lucky to be in the Five Live, BBC Radio Five Live green room, listening to our colleague Ian Carter, former tennis correspondent, who just did the entire deciding set on his own with just one of the summarizer. And we were jumping up and down, punching the edge. And not for either one of the players specifically, just it as a contest. I mean, it was truly uplifting.
It was as good as sport gets. Simple as that. As good as sport gets. Now, the match itself, I'm sorry for moving on. I feel like we should spend a whole show talking about Gilles Muller, but it's Magic Monday and there's so much to cover, and we do want to keep these daily podcasts punchy. We know you don't have, you know, 2 hours in your day every day to listen to us waffle on. So apologies for not giving everything the time it perhaps deserves. But the whole length and drama of that match gave rise to an unusual situation with regard to scheduling, in that Novak Djokovic and Adrian Mannarino were supposed to play on court number one after that match. What ended up happening is their match was cancelled altogether. We had this sort of mystery situation where we had a live feed of centre court after the Federer-Dimitrov match wrapped up, which was about 2 hours before the Nadal-Muller match ended up finishing, and they didn't take the nets down, did they? The court looked ready for play the whole time, and it could have been that they were keeping it ready just in case the Nadal-Muller match needed to be moved there in the event that it went on for an hour longer than it in fact did. Or, of course, we were thinking they're readying it to move the Djokovic match there. In the end, they didn't seem to be readying it for anything, and they didn't make any announcements about what they were thinking or what they were deciding, and we were all just left to speculate. And poor Vassos Alexander, our Five Live colleague who's supposed to be commentating on the Djokovic match and who was working on the Chris Evans Breakfast Show on Radio 2 this morning, he was just hanging around, not knowing what was going on. And
I went up to the player lawn, where I found basically a deserted lawn except Novak Djokovic, Mario Ancic and Andre Agassi just kicking their heels, walking around. Still clearly, even 10 minutes before the end of that Nadal match, I don't think a firm decision had been made, because I heard Novak Djokovic say or talk to the officials about 12 o'clock, which is when the match will be rearranged for tomorrow. And then I also heard him say, but let's just leave it another 10 minutes or so. So I don't know what that either-or situation was, but, you know, it still felt to me as though there was a possibility that Djokovic may get out there. I then saw him doing some pretty vigorous warming up and stretching exercises, and then the next thing you know, match is over, and Novak Djokovic shoots off down to the locker room. I'm actually at that point thinking, I think he's gone to go and get ready to play. And then 20 seconds later, no more play this evening. Now, Wimbledon are going to announce or put out a statement tonight.
We are anticipating a statement. Simon Briggs, Simon Briggs has arrived. Has that statement arrived, Simon?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Is it now irrelevant? You know, kind of the damage is done with regards to sort of the dithering and
What's your take on it all, Simon? Yeah. The Djokovic situation of the match not ending up getting played at all. Did you have any sense in your mind as to what they were thinking or what they were maybe going to do or what they should have done, in your view?
Yeah, I haven't looked at it closely. I know that I've asked in previous years about moving matches from one court to another, and there have been security and ticketing issues that have made it pretty much impossible to say, according to the Wimbledon press office, you can just switch over. If people have left already, you can't move a crowd across.
They've done it though. Gilles Simon, Gael Monfils, 2 years ago, middle Saturday, mid-match at 9:04, after about an hour and a half of play, they moved it mid-match to centre court and completed it there, and all the crowd from court number one were invited to go over to centre court if they wanted to. It was by no means a full crowd, but it was one of the best tennis atmospheres I've ever experienced.
Okay, so that was a precedent.
But obviously a slightly different one, in that this match had not started yet. I mean, the statement will be interesting just to find out what they were, hopefully, what they were thinking and why they didn't make the decision to play it. Hopefully we find out.
I think that's the issue, isn't it? Speculation filled the vacuum. Why was there no information?
Well, also, though, I guess it's a reasonably fast-moving situation. I mean, one thing which I think this year has been particularly difficult, partly because we've got such a late tournament in the calendar, so it's noticeable that we seem to be losing, like, the light about 45 minutes earlier.
That's interesting. I'd not thought of that.
And there's the other... I mean, Andy today, on a totally different scheduling issue about the women and the men, was saying we should play two matches of each on the show courts. But again, look at the state of the grass. You know, I mean, there are some constraints here that if you start early, if you play an extra round... Sorry, extra hour, I mean... every day on the grass. I mean, what's that going to be? And if warmer summers are going to become a regular feature, they've either got to improve the technology that goes into sequencing the DNA of that grass, or they've got to keep the matches to the time clock that we're working on. I don't see how they can get any more play on the big two courts.
So we've covered gender bias scheduling, DNA sequencing of grass, and climate change there. All in one. All the big topics here on the Tennis Podcast.
That's why we have Simon Briggs, isn't it?
That's why we have Simon Briggs.
There's no way I'd have got Dean in sequencing anywhere. In the next 6 years, I could have been talking and I wouldn't have come up with that.
To be fair, I was commentating the or reporting on the Thomas Burdick-Dominic Thiem thriller out on court number 3 today, 5-set match, and the court was in a terrible state. Like we were discussing, it wasn't the wear of the court, though they were extremely worn. It was the divots. There were deep divots on those baselines and a lot of bad bounces. So look, I know that evidence is anecdotal. People are trying to do sort of scientific analyses of state of grass, but
Simon Briggs is. No, honestly, I think it's great, Simon.
So yeah, I mean, there's no doubt they're in a bad state, and that, yeah. And look, that's a valid point. I just think find a way.
Yeah.
In the words of Greg, find a way.
But I mean, yeah, it was interesting to hear Murray saying his, you know, he backs fairness, equality of scheduling. We also had Angelique Kerber putting in a bit of a complaint and saying she may go and see the organisers about that situation, and because she didn't particularly like being out on court too. And we should also just very quickly, as a full stop to this, just play you what Chris Evert said to Catherine Whittaker.
I think there needs to be a discussion on the scheduling a little bit more clearly, because it's equal prize money, so why not equal representation on center court and court number one? There just needs to be a discussion, and they should look at probably instead of 4 men's matches and 2 women's, you know, I would like to see it 3 and 3, and I think any woman would like to see it that way, only because just to go along with the equal prize money.
In terms of the discussion that's been had so far, the defence that the club has used is about marquee players and the expectations of the TV public and the paying public here. They've said they expect to see marquee players. How do the likes of Yelena Ostapenko become a marquee player if they're out on court 12?
Well, there have been years where women have been more marquee than the men players. And I think, fortunately for men's tennis, unfortunately for the women this year, the top 4 men are very high in the marquee value. And, you know, it's hard to dispute putting Djokovic on court number 2, you know. But I just think, I wonder about that argument, because there have been years where the women have been more attractive and to watch, and there have been bigger names, and they've still gone with the 4 men, the 2 women. So I think, why not just make it equal and simple for everyone? I mean, that's the way the prize money is now, and why not, again, representation on the show courts?
So that's the view of Chris Evert. She left it in no doubt as to how she feels, and she feels that equality of scheduling needs to be thought about and can be achieved. We'll leave that there. What else, Catherine?
Well, I think we should just talk about the matches, the women's matches. Angelique Kerber, Garbiñe Muguruza kicked off the day. It feels like about 100 years ago now, but at the time, it was the match of the tournament, briefly, wasn't it? It was extraordinary.
It was. I should also say that Chris Evert was talking to Catherine on 5 Live, but I got the chance to commentate for 5 Live on that Kerber-Muguruza match. I mean, all other elements aside, Simon, I don't know whether you were across that one at all or any of your team were. That was, both women, I feel returning to the form of last year. That was a really, really good match. Muguruza winning it. It was great stuff.
And returning to the hunger of last year as well. They both wanted that so much. They found some sort of fight in them, I thought, that I hadn't seen recently.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that all the women's matches today were fascinating. The Ostapenko one was going on at the same time. Did she take 8 match points to get the job done? And against Svitolina. So that was an absolute cracker. And she just blows your mind, doesn't she? The way that she can be in that position. So she's wasted 7 match points, and then she just goes for a winner on the third shot of the rally every time and makes them. I mean, her brain seems to be made of different stuff. I think she's had some DNA sequencing too.
She's got it in again.
Maybe she's a Blade Runner or something.
Unbelievable, isn't she? She is unbelievable. I was actually quite heartened to see her squander those match points, because it convinced me that she was human, because I was starting to think that she's not made of the same stuff I am as well. But then when I saw her squandering those match points, I did at least think, oh, you must be feeling something, even though you don't look like you are, but you must be. But yeah, she now plays Venus Williams. That match was going to be...
Ostapenko Williams.
That match was going to be first up on centre tomorrow. It's now going to be second after a midday start because we have the Djokovic-Manarino match to kick things off. Venus was very good today, wasn't she?
Yeah, she looked efficient. I mean, it was never in doubt against Anna Konyu, was it, out there on centre court. And it's just interesting the way she's clicked into a gear of reliability out there now. I mean... I would make her favourite against Ostapenko. I don't know about you. What do you think?
Ostapenko's been second favourite. She's always second favourite, and she always wins. She was second favourite for every match at the French Open. She was second favourite against Vitolina. She was definitely second favourite. Nobody's been talking about
her. I would have backed her in every match until this point, personally.
Okay. Okay.
Maybe you would say that, David Law. But actually, that is, I think, true.
Fair enough.
She won't reach the final, though.
Following that on centre court, Joe Konta against Simona Halep. British writers must be getting excited about having a man and a woman into the quarterfinals here.
I mean, there's so much stuff to get in tomorrow, Simon. Where do you go first? What's the lead?
Well, it's a quiet week for sport elsewhere. I mean, last week we were getting tennis in amidst on the Telegraph in particular, the Lions mania, the Lords Test match. It was still holding its own most days. But this week, fortunately, the scene is opening up for us to fill pages and pages with tennis comment, which is great. I mean,
it is great.
It's been an amazing tournament, and continues to be. Particularly, the women's draw seems to be more fascinating than the men's.
It is magnificent that the prospect that we have for the next few days. I'm just interested editorially when we think of Konta's big win today. Andy Murray got through. Rafael Nadal is out. The whole Djokovic thing not getting on the court.
Mm. We're leading with a split front, I think, with Murray and Konta as the first time that they've been two Brit. Sorry, no, a male and female British quarterfinalists in '73. And Konta's got the lion's share of the coverage. We've got two pieces on her match. I've just done one piece on Andy's win, and then there's a little comment about what does it say about British tennis as a whole.
What are your two pieces then on Konta? How does that separate up?
I didn't write them, so I can't say for sure, but I guess it's probably one of them is more about her as a person, and one of them is more about the match, I think.
But interesting.
That's slightly out of my hands.
Well, we'll look forward to reading them.
First woman since Joe Jury, I think, here in 1984. So first woman in my lifetime, first British woman in my lifetime to reach a quarterfinal here.
Your lifetime hasn't been that long. But I know what you mean. It's a big deal, isn't it? And she's becoming more and more comfortable on the stage of centre court and court number one by the day. We were talking a little bit earlier. There's still, I feel, question marks in her head about what's required of her in the interview room. And I mean, look, that's a very minor footnote in the grand scheme of things. We are not the most important thing. But, you know, it's not there yet, is it? She's not entirely comfortable in interview situations just yet with us lot.
No, I mean, when you spend time on the tour, I think you know how not to ask too far forward-looking questions because they'll be diffused. You kind of have to get in under her defences and go for a slightly different style of question with her. But people who only see her at Wimbledon haven't quite worked her out. And, yeah, it's a problem on both sides. She obviously does have a manner of kind of going safety first, which means not giving us an awful lot to go on. So baking really was the only theme that she expanded on today. And I think we've kind of done that a little bit. I think that the muffins have sort of been and gone, and we could have done with another tidbit from her sort of whatever she's watching on telly or who she's been hanging out with in the park or whatever else we could have learned.
I felt there was a good insight from Jonathan Overend actually on this subject. That he interviewed her over the weekend for the Sports Week show. And, I mean, look, he actually mentioned this, you got the sense that she was trying to think through everything she was saying in terms of how it could be interpreted and maybe as a headline. And she was just a bit scared of not saying the wrong thing in a way. And yeah, I mean, I think that hopefully from her perspective will become just a bit more comfortable as time goes on.
And it's still relatively new to her, isn't it? I mean, Andy Murray went through a period of being a bit scared of how everything can be interpreted and sort of was on the defensive for a while there, and has grown into being as comfortable as he is being himself in front of the world's media. So maybe it'll come. Maybe it'll come. Maybe she'll always have to wear that suit of armour. But if she's winning, then it's hard to argue with, isn't it?
Well,
it's working for her.
Results are fantastic.
Or maybe we can talk to Wim Fissette more, because we spoke to him on Saturday and he was absolutely fantastic.
He was, wasn't he?
And, you know, talking about how he discussed, do you ever need to smash a racket? Do you need to keep your emotional sort of hygiene to that high level, or can you get a bit down and dirty every now and again? And she said, no, it doesn't help me. I've discovered that it's a negative thing. And it's not like Jo would ever discuss that herself, so maybe we just need to see a bit more of Wim.
And of course, he coached briefly for a period Konta's quarterfinal opponent, Simona Halep. That's got to help. Help Konta, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I first met him when he was working with Halep, and he talked about her movement. I remember saying he said that she had footballer's legs, like her father was a footballer, and he compared her movement actually to Roger Federer's, that kind of floating capacity that she has. She will be presumably covering a lot of ground, and you'd expect that Konta will be the aggressor. And obviously, when they played on clay, that was one aspect of the game that was neutralised a bit by the surface, and Konta really got nowhere near Halep in Constanza, because Halep was just outstanding there. But in Miami, when they played, that was a mental meltdown that Halep experienced. I think that was a turning point for her mentally anyway, because she then had a period away from her coach. She decided that she needed to improve, and probably won't do that again. But
Well, Cahill ditched her. For about 2 weeks, he said, "Look, if you don't sort yourself out, I'm not having this." And he walked away.
There was a very sort of telling coaching intervention, wasn't there, where he said that you just keep on doing this. You can't keep on going to bits at these late moments and in three set matches. Anyway, I think she won't do that again, but she will be under more pressure trying to get to Konta's heavy forehands than she was on the clay, where her movement's so supreme.
Incidentally, she is an excellent footballer, actually. You mentioned footballer's legs, and I've seen her do keepy up with just a tiny ball. I mean, she really can play, apparently. And I think she's the sort of athlete that would just excel pretty much at any sport. And
One of these annoying people
that's so basically annoying.
Great at everything.
Yeah, it's a bit like these people who know about DNA sequencing. tell me what that is afterwards. Anyway, I think she might win that.
Halep.
Mm. Anyway, then we'll see, won't we?
The other two women's quarterfinals tomorrow, Garbiñe Muguruza against Svetlana Kuznetsova, who beat Radvanska today, very good win, and Magdalena Rybarikova, who won the battle of the unseeded players against Petra Martic, taking on Coco Vandeweghe, who's yet to drop a set.
Funny that, isn't it?
Funny that, yeah. So we should just very quickly touch upon men's matches today that we haven't yet. Andy Murray. We haven't talked about Andy Murray
yet.
Oh,
yeah.
He beat Benoit Paire.
What did you think?
Yeah, again, I mean, he was very tight on errors. I think there are eight unforced errors he was credited with, so that was very low. Still limping and more painfully even than in any of his previous matches. Benoit Paire afterwards said, well, doesn't matter what you do between the points. When it came to the rallies, he ran like a rabbit and backed him to win the title.
There was one of those great moments where one of the journalists put to Andy Murray that Benoit Paire had said he ran like a rabbit, and it was kind of put to him in that way that Andy was supposed to laugh, and of course Andy just stared him out. It was very funny.
He doesn't like doing laughing when he's expected to do laughing, does he?
I realised the other day why asking Andy Murray is such a nerve-wracking experience when you ask him a question in a press conference, because he doesn't blink. I realise that's what it is.
No, he's
terrifying.
He does give you the stone face, doesn't he? It's fantastic.
It is exactly like it must be when you're serving to him. When you're sending on a second serve and you just know that it's going to be rammed back down your throat. That's kind of the experience.
I was particularly enjoying when at one stage he was doing the sarcastic thumbs up to his boxer a little bit today towards the end of the first set, and he actually at one point missed something and clearly was blaming Lendl's instructions or something like that, and he turned around and he just glared at the box, and Lendl just glared back. And I thought, I'm quite glad I'm not in the middle of that.
A chill in the air.
Scary.
Murray now, though, suddenly, you know, it was only 10 days ago that we were all being encouraged to mystically rub a picture of his hip. And now he's the favourite to reach the final. It's ridiculous. But for a certain Mr. Marin Cilic, who was awesome today, 2-2-2 against Roberto Bautista-Agut, who, in the words of, who was it, that commentated that match and said this in, was it Vassos Alexander, who said he gives you absolutely nothing, Bautista Agutin, to beat him 2-2-2. Pretty impressive. But before that, you'll have to get through Sam Querrey, Andy Murray, who beat Kevin Anderson in five sets today. No offence to either of them. Lovely blokes. Very glad I wasn't assigned to that match.
Catherine Whittaker there. No,
come on.
No, I mean, if you were going to get any of the matches, that felt a little bit like the short straw.
You need a contrast of styles is the recipe.
It was an epic.
Is the recipe for a great match, and that is...
I mean, look, we didn't see it. Maybe it was great.
Maybe it was really great. Delith Lloyd looked like she'd been...
Through
the mill a bit when she came back from Court 18. But anyway, chuffed for Sam Querrey. Bit gutted for Kevin Anderson. He's worked so hard to
come
back.
Nice bloke. What do you think, Sam Querrey?
Lovely bloke.
Andy Murray. Simon?
Well, I mean, it's the kind of opponent Andy would normally chew up. The big server who doesn't like it when a lot of balls get put back in play. I think Andy will win, but I'm still concerned because it's just so bizarre, isn't it, to have a guy who's, you know, a serious contender for a title, and yet you walk around behind him and he looks like he's not going to make it, you know, up the stairs.
It's fine because Sam Querrey is my sweepstake pick.
That's your consolation if Andy Murray loses.
The stars are aligning, David. There's just the final result from today that I want to touch upon. Roger Federer taking out Grigor Dimitrov in three straight sets. There was a tweet from PseudoFed, who's the comical fake Roger Federer account that nobody knows who runs it, but it must be an insider. Anyway, who said, so it's in the first person voice of fake Roger Federer saying, it was really nice today to go to the park and have a hit with my son or something.
To play with the kids.
To play with the kids, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is harsh, but kind of, it was man and boy.
That was not a good experience for Grigor Dimitrov out there today, was it?
Yeah, but surely you just get the impression that he immediately starts booking his flight as soon as he sees Federer on his draw sheet, don't you think? I mean, that's the impression he gives me.
That's not good enough, though, is it? It's not good enough. He's too good a player to do that. I think Federer was good today.
But still,
he was great.
You know.
I was expecting him to win. I was expecting him to be great, and I was expecting him to win. I just expected a bit more from Dimitrov.
Yeah, but the memory I can't erase that went back between those two is, I think, Australian Open 2016, they were about to go on, and the cameras caught them playing football together in the media lounge.
Yeah.
The player lounge. And, you know, you just thought that can't be the right way to mentally approach your match against a bloke who not only... that you compared to all the time, but whose talent agency represents you.
That's probably the perfect thing for Federer to do and the worst possible thing for Dimitrov to do.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
There's one last thing we have to cover, and that is today's input from... this is my opportunity to say the words artificial intelligence platform, IBM Watson, which is something that the Telegraph are doing this year in association with IBM using all of their billions of data
Ladies
points. I don't think it's quite
gentlemen.
Billions, but it's a lot. It's a lot of
Please
data points
to
try and gain a deeper analysis into the various minutes. Factors that influence
Please
a tennis match. Today's factor is stamina
and, make sure you
and who has the greatest stamina.
Can we just
in
say
tennis?
Gilles Muller and leave it there?
Yeah. Why was he not featured in the article I was saying? Maybe there's a hasty rewrite happening as we speak. Who would you guess, Simon? This is probably unfair to put you on the spot. Would come out as the player of greatest stamina.
And John Isner.
I should probably point out here that the distinction is made between mental and physical stamina. I don't quite understand how the data can distinguish between those things, but it's an important distinction.
Well, I go Rafa, I guess.
Yeah.
He's in there, but apparently the data says Djokovic.
Well, Mr. Resilience. We're talking a guy who played against Andy Murray over 5 hours at the Australian Open in the semi-finals, and then 2 days later played Rafael Nadal over 6 hours and beat both of them. You know,
it's an interesting one, though, isn't it? I would agree. He springs to mind for me, you know, that 2012 Australian Open final against Rafa, where I saw Rafa removing his blood-stained socks afterwards. That's what springs to my mind. But he used to be defined by his lack of stamina, by his flakiness in the long matches. It's a ridiculous turnaround. So, yeah, it's an interesting talking about. On the women's side, Venus Williams comes out top above her
Venus
sister
Williams.
Serena. Yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah, Venus Williams is the hardiest female player, winning 79% of matches over 1 hour 45 minutes, with sister Serena on 71%. Serena, Bartoli, Marion Bartoli and Petra Kvitova all come out pretty high, which makes sense to me. But I thought that maybe she's been excluded from the data. I don't know. Maybe this is a dodgy thing to bring up. But I thought Maria Sharapova had one of the best. Certainly she has one of the best. I remember at the time of all of the hoo-ha that we don't need to go into, there was definitely a stat bandied around about how strong her three-set record was, that it was the strongest in the game.
She's exceptionally strong mentally, I always think. You know, she's a pretty reliable character. I would have also... You know, even somebody like Petra Kvitova used to win so many three-set matches, you know, play so many three-set matches.
I'm going to put Yelena Ostapenko in there.
Hey, what about Svetlana Kuznetsova?
She hasn't been around enough. She hasn't been around enough for there to be enough data points about her for it to feature in the articles.
She only has three-set matches. Three shot rallies.
I want to shove Yelena Ostapenko in there. If you want to have your say, it's hashtag what makes great. If you want to see the data, then go to ibm.com/Wimbledon. That's probably where my brother Nerdy Math is right now. And if you want to see what the Telegraph have to say about the data, go to the Telegraph and read Simon's two articles about Joe Konta, everyone else's various articles about various other things. Whoever's got the tough gig of writing up the Nadal piece right now, read it all.
That's going to be a late one, isn't it? Whoever's written that one. Who's on Nadal tonight?
Jeremy Wilson, who's better known for his coverage of Arsenal.
But I read that.
He can turn his hand pretty well to tennis too.
Looking forward to it. I tell you, it's going to be great reading tonight, isn't it?
It's going to be great reading. So make sure you check that out. Make sure you keep listening to our daily tennis podcast. How many are there to go? Six.
I don't do maths, Karen.
Six of the things. We're over halfway.
Are we?
Amazing. Thank you for listening. We've been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. We really hope you're enjoying these daily pods, and we'll be back tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.